Vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance gave his speech at the RNC last night. Trump's running mate just joined the U.S. Senate representing Ohio in January of last year and never held a political office before that. Now that the 39-year-old has been catapulted onto the national stage, will Trump's VP pick have the power to bring in any voters or end up costing the Republicans votes? To talk more about the impact of running mates, I'm joined by Christopher Devine, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Dayton and co-author of Do Running Mates Matter? Devine begins by giving his initial thoughts on J.D. Vance as the VP pick.
It's not as clear from his record what to expect from him. And so voters typically want someone who has more experience and clearer qualifications, someone they can be sure that, in this case, 6 months from now, could take over the vice presidency or even the presidency if necessary. And I think Trump passing over people like, let's say, Marco Rubio has a quarter century of federal, state, and local experience, knows politics very well. That would have been someone who would have been clearly qualified for office. I don't think anyone would have a question about it. J.D. Vance, they will. And I think that might bring up questions, even though we know a lot about Donald Trump. It might bring up questions about, you know, how serious is he about governing this time around? Or is he going to be focused on kind of personal politics, revenge and retribution, as he's talked about it sometimes? I think that is a little of a wild card for Americans.
Yeah, obviously there's a different feel for it blocks from us in the Pfizer. But for the broader American public, do you think Vance as Trump's running mate will help or hinder the reelection chances? There's a long time between now and the election.
Yeah. Well, first, you're absolutely right that for the delegates at the convention right now, for Republicans generally, J.D. Vance is a popular figure. I can tell you in recent years, if you look at the data, the popularity of vice presidential candidates, my co-author and I, Kyle Kopka, we've documented a trend here where you see that vice presidential candidates over time have become less popular. They're less of a way of appealing to Americans, kind of broadly. They're really popular within their own party. In fact, Mike Pence and Kamala Harris, for the data since 1968 to 2020, they were the most popular running mates within their own party. They were the least popular with the other party. In fact, by 15 points out of 100, they were lower. And with independents, they were, I think, the second least popular. So, there's a trend towards loving your own running mate, your own party's running mate, but really not liking the opposite parties. And then for those folks who are in the middle, instead of the VP being some chance to peel people off with a more popular figure, instead they've become so closely aligned with the presidential candidate that people kind of throw up their hands and say, well, that's not doing it for me either.
Right. So the book you've been referencing is the one you co-wrote called Do Running Mates Matter? And I'm wondering, can you just go over some of the data that you're studying and some of the key takeaways that we might have not already talked about when it comes to the whole concept of running mates?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So there's a wealth of data in there. The short version of it is that we really look at three different ways that people talk about running mates mattering, three different ways that could impact how people vote. And the first one is what we call direct effects, the idea that because, let's say, you really like J.D. Vance or you really dislike him, that you might be that much more likely to vote for or vote against the ticket. You hear people say, for example, hey, I was thinking of voting for John McCain, but then he picked Sarah Palin and I really didn't like her, so I didn't vote for the ticket. People say that. Well, there's a lot of times people feel like that's what motivated them. But from a political science standpoint, we often find that, it's not clear. Maybe they're already headed in that direction. They just wanted to, anchor that to a certain specific thing. They could say, oh, that's what did it for me. So first, these direct effects of voting differently because you like or dislike the vice presidential candidate, we don't see much evidence of that. Likewise, when we look at what we call targeted effects. So maybe it's not that this person's going to really help or hurt with the electorate as a whole, but a certain group of people. Tim Kaine in 2016, maybe he'll appeal to Catholics the same way that we're hearing that, hey, maybe J.D. Vance will appeal to Catholic voters, right? When you look at the data for it, and we do it in a pretty rigorous way, we show, I think, pretty clearly that there was not a movement toward those candidates, their ticket, among these certain groups of voters, evangelicals, for example, for Pence in 2016. The only exception, by the way, is Kamala Harris in 2020, which this case came after the book in a separate analysis. We looked at this. She did seem to help with women voters and black voters, but not by that much. Where running mates really matter is kind of what I was referencing before. We call these indirect effects, that they can influence how people think about the presidential candidate because that's who they're actually voting for. I mean, sure, we're electing this ticket, but who's going to choose their less preferred presidential candidate just so I can get that vice president in office. I'd love to see that person be vice president. I don't think many people do that. So they're focusing on the presidential candidate, but their sense of who that person is can be shaped by the choice of a running mate because, again, that's often called the first presidential act. That's a major personnel decision that they make during the campaign. And yeah, just tells you a lot about who the presidential candidate is.
Yeah. So going on those indirect effects and that theme, Vance will have little appeal to voters outside of this Republican base. Do you think it could go as far as costing Trump votes or hindering things?
I think it will cost him overall. I don't think it'll be by a lot. Kyle Kopko and I, our general conclusion is that, yeah, running mates matter, but let's not overstate things. They're probably not going to be game changers. That's just an unrealistic expectation. I think J.D. Vance is going to help with certain folks. I think he is going to absolutely engage and motivate Republicans, people who already were fond of Donald Trump. But outside of the coalition, what's the appeal that they weren't already getting from Donald Trump? This is not to say inherently there's something wrong with J.D. Vance. I mean, that might depend on folks' politics, but who out there doesn't like Donald Trump's politics but likes J.D. Vance's? They're kind of too similar for that. And you also don't have that appeal of, you know, demonstrated competence in the job because he is relatively lacking in experience. And it's not that people necessarily, again, you know, vote for a VP or wow, I just really like, you know, wow, Marco Rubio has so much experience. That'd be wonderful if he was VP, right? But I think people do respond to a failure on the presidential candidate's part to pick someone who meets kind of their normal standards. J.D. Vance, I've described him, and I'm reluctant to say it, but I just think it's true. He's the least qualified vice presidential candidate in modern history, even to a greater degree than Sarah Palin, who, by the way, had served for nearly a decade in local and state office before she was governor for 2 years at the time of her selection. John Edwards was a freshman senator in 04. I don't think he was a great pick at all, but he was in the sixth year of his first term and had also done pretty well in presidential primary. So J.D. Vance is conspicuous and lacking experience, more so than any recent running mate. And while there are other things that folks are considering, he's being scrutinized for his positions. Abortion especially has come up this week and some Democratic attacks on him. I think folks will eventually get around to discussing this question. Hey, is this guy ready to take over as president potentially 6 months from now?
I mean, we can call it ambivalence at best, right, mm-hmm. when it comes to VP picks. And another thing I want to touch upon in regarding the unpopularity that exists with something with VP candidates in general is something you call the Veep stakes. So can you explain that?
Yeah, the Veep stakes kind of gets to this period that we're really just concluding now that we know who the pick is. And it wasn't always this way. It used to be the case that at a convention, we would find out who the presidential candidate was going to be. And technically, formally, that's still true. But back then, we didn't have the situation where delegates came to the convention bound, required to vote for whoever won the primary in their state. There were still primaries, but they were often called beauty contests. You know, it didn't actually bind the delegates. And so because we didn't know until the convention the presidential candidate was going to be, we also didn't know who the vice presidential candidate would be. And often there was this matching that would go on, balancing as it's called, like, okay, well, if this person got the presidential nomination, then we should pick a person from this part of the country for the VP nomination and so on. So there wasn't really an opportunity to scrutinize the potential VPs. Well, in the early 1970s, we get these reforms to the parties, which, you know, short version of it, we do get delegates who are bound by primary results. And so they show up committed to voting for a certain presidential candidate. And that means, just like this time around, we know months in advance that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican candidate. We think we knew months in advance that Joe Biden's going to be the Democratic candidate. It still seems like it's in flux. I mean, I don't know. We'll see there. But at least for Trump's purposes, he had these months in between where we all knew he's going to have the choice to scrutinize various candidates, go through a vetting process and even publicly leak names to kind of gauge reactions to them. And that's really what we call the Veep stakes, kind of a silly name for it, right? It's not a sweepstakes. They're not just getting lucky and getting picked for this. But it kind of fits with what I've described as this game-like quality to discussing this actually very serious, very important choice, where, you know, it's almost like this parlor game that people play, and we're just seeing its conclusion now, where the speculation has ended and we know who the running mate is.
Yeah, and it's more about who might help someone win an election rather than how can they help govern.
Yeah, I think that's really unfortunate. Thanks for bringing that up. And that's there was a book that I wrote more recently. The subtitle is What's Wrong with the Veep Stakes. The actual title is more boring. But, what's wrong with the Veep Stakes, okay? Not the selection process itself, but the way we talk about it. And this is a much more responsible discussion, but broadly what happens in news media is this not very serious discussion of who should win. that focuses way too much on who can help in the election, as if it doesn't even matter how this person would perform once in office. I think it's really unfortunate that in that process, there's not nearly enough attention to who's qualified to be vice president of the United States, or again, president if necessary. And for example, just to throw one quick fact at you. So I examined media coverage of the Veep stakes over the period from 2000 to 2020 and kind of categorized all the things that they would talk about. When you see these profiles, like what about Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum, Tom Cotton, Tim Scott, Lisa Stefanik, what things do they discuss? And what I found is that about 5% of them, these media profiles, specifically discuss whether this person actually qualified for the job. And that was about the same percentage, actually a little lower than the percentage that discussed their physical appearance. Okay. You know, yeah. It's like kind of funny, but kind of not.
Yeah.
They're as likely to talk about their looks in a positive or negative way than they are to talk about, hey, is this person even up to the job? You know, I hope that changes.
So to summarize, what would you say is your main thing you want people to keep in mind with this whole discussion about VPs as we are about to really ramp up into this election cycle?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate you putting it that way. And I guess I would step back and I would say I'm often struck by the disconnect in how people talk about vice presidents, that we make fun of them. And we know the shows, Veep and all these other ones where the vice president is just a joke. But it's an important role. It's odd, you know, political scientists have studied. There's been this evolution over time for about 50 years, really starting with the Carter Mondale administration, where even though the formal powers of the vice president did not change, I mean, look at the Constitution. The powers don't change. They break ties in the Senate. They preside over the Senate if they so choose. They count the electoral votes, electoral college before a joint session of Congress. That used to not be a big deal. We saw that it can be. And of course, they succeed the president if something happens to that person, right? That's actually not a lot of day-to-day power. But informally, what's happened over the last half century is that VPs have just come to be accepted as major players in the administration. They have unparalleled access to the president. They're involved in major decisions. They're often, as it's called, the last person in the room. That's what Joe Biden promised with the Kamala Harris vice presidency and so on. Dick Cheney, of course, was a powerful vice president, on and on. They have a very important role in the White House, not because they have a certain power they act on their own, really, but because they have the president's ear. Typically. And we should take them seriously. We should factor them into our choice between the presidential tickets. It's not just the presidential candidates. It's our vice presidential candidates, too. We should take that seriously. And if you really feel like a certain person would be bad for that job, then my message certainly is not, hey, running mate shouldn't matter to you. You know, if you really feel like that's a concern, then I think that's valid. And we should all be factoring it into our evaluation and hoping that the best, not just president, but vice president gets elected to the job.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much, Audrey.
Christopher Devine is an associate professor of political science at the University of Dayton and co-author of Do Running Mates Matter? You can listen to our extended conversation at wuwm.com.